Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Digital technology has allowed us to be connected instantaneously to the entire world, and yet more often than not, we are becoming more isolated from those living in close proximity to us. Last year, a national survey showed only about a quarter of adults know all or most of their neighbors, and that number is down from just 8 years ago. Trust in our neighbors, who have often been first responders in times of crisis, is also declining, likely due to our not knowing each other. It's all part of the growing trend of loneliness in America, and it's contributing to our divisions, and that, in turn, is becoming a source of stress in many people's lives. So how do we reverse this spiral? Once neighborhood bonds disappear, can they be rebuilt? This hour, we hear from some who not only think they can, but are working with others to do so, and we learn about what this disconnectedness is doing to our health. Dr. Amy Cannavallo is a professor of psychological science and organizational science at UNC Charlotte. She is here with Dr. Joshua Kervin, clinical social worker and faculty member in the School of Social Work, both of them at UNC Charlotte. And Jamal Kennard is with us. He's a community activist working to put into practice some of the things that we'll be talking about this hour. He's executive director at Lakeview Neighborhood Alliance. Thank you all for being here. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
We're all in the same room at the same time. It's a red letter day. Amy, I remember growing up as a kid, we all knew our neighbors. In fact, we didn't lock our doors. We left our doors open. People, next door neighbors came and went. We just walked into their houses and unannounced. We didn't even knock on the doors. That evidently is not the case. It's much worse than that today. Why? What changed?
Wow, I think a lot has changed. So I think the world has become bigger for everyone. And you're right, you're having different people mixing, right? People from different backgrounds, with different interests and different knowledge. And it takes effort to get to know people who are unlike you. And I think that we know that people become not just skeptical, but I think they know this from the data, that they often assume that other people don't want to get to know them. And so they're hesitant to try to get to know others.
Plus, it seems that we have built the world differently. Most people don't have front porches. If they do, they don't use them. We have back decks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so we don't sit out there and watch people go up and down the street and say, hey, mm-hmm. hey, how you doing? Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask all three of you, as a result of that, what have we lost? And why are those little connections that don't just say hi? Why is that important? I'll start with you, Amy. We'll go down the table here.
Oh, that's tremendously important. So in the psychological literature, we have a term for that. We call them weak ties, right? But those weak ties can ground you and give you a sense of belonging. And they offer a sense of connection without a lot of commitment, right? So when I walk my dog in the morning, I know who's going to come out on their porch and feed their cats, and you wave to them. When you don't have that, even that sense of connection, it can get really difficult to think about those people as part of your world.
Joshua.
Yeah, I think that it starts with us. One of the key components I often think about when I grew up in my neighborhood was just the sense of I had others that were non-family that had my back, that had my best interest, that was going to correct me when I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think that as I have matriculated to see current neighborhoods, I think that is lacking. Mm-hmm. And I pose the question, is it based on fear? And what is that fear of? Mm-hmm. Is that fear of rejection by initiating good morning? Is it fear of being ignored, as if when you say good morning, someone may not say anything at all? Or is it fear of safety? Yeah. Now, so of course, safety is something that is paramount in any neighborhood, but I think that is something that is stopping you. So I'm asking you to step out of your comfort zone and be the one to initiate that conversation in Good Morning.
Jamal, you're one of the people on the ground trying to make this happen, reestablish these connections. Talk to me about your take on that. Why are these connections important?
I'm a former trainer with the Racial Equity Institute, so we was given an analysis there. And our analysis is pretty much based on power. I think you got to have a power analysis about how this country is organized and situated and built upon. And I think it starts with how we have evolved our economy over years. We went to a very communal agriculture economy. Then we went from agriculture to more of an industrialized economy. And now we're in the technology boom. Right. And I think whenever you have that relationship with the economy, which is the relationship between people and the earth, now that determines people's relationship with each other, which is politics. And so when you go from a highly industrialized teamwork, having to work together, agriculture, to now being in a technology standpoint to where it's very much rooted in gross individualism and you're taking people out of the household, you're taking people, you know, even out of the communal workspace inside of an office. Most people want to work by themselves now, even in the office, or work from home, Zoom. I want to be able to turn my camera off and hit mute and be in my own space. That determines society. And I think I'm really big on being hard on the problems and not on the people. And when we look at that, I think we have a society that's been curated for gross individualism, and I think that's the main problem.
Yeah, we get sucked down into our phones, and our phones have replaced everything. And you just mentioned that we don't want to go to work. People don't want to go back to work. They like working from home. Okay, well, that's cool, but you never leave the house.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to go to the library to look something up and talk to the librarian or other people in the library because it's all on your phone or on your computer. It's all there. I mean, are we forgetting how to be social?
I would pose that we are somewhat being wayward in understanding the importance of connections. You know, one thing that I think I have observed is that my friends are in my phone, and my neighbors are who I live with. And how have we gotten to that point of saying, how can something that's in my device, making sure it's charged up, make me feel ready for the day? And I may go out the house and say, good morning, have a good day. That's it. Because I think that's important that we just make time to spend time with those that we live around, because that is home.
Sure.
And a lot of people, as you say, as one of you said, I think Jamal said, that will work from home now, so they don't have to get out and go into their car and go to work in the morning. They don't have to talk to somebody in the office. We don't take daily newspapers anymore, so there's no reason to go out and pick it up off the driveway in the morning and say hi to the neighbors who are doing the same thing. The mail, everything's on email now pretty much. Our bills arrive on the internet. They don't necessarily arrive in the mailbox. You don't have to go to the mailbox. So we're living these lonely, isolated lives, and it seems to me that you don't know how to build those social. You don't have an opportunity to build those social connections. What's at stake here?
What's at stake? Oh my gosh, everything.
Yeah.
Feeling connected to your community, feeling connected to other people, are when we have these brief interactions with people who are not super close to us, it can provide us with just a positive emotional experience, right? That can help buffer against daily stressors, right? So when you have these interactions with your neighbors, even though maybe they're not your best friend, they can help you indirectly navigate and buffer against the daily drudgery of life, right? I don't if that makes sense. Right? So we get positive emotions. It can help us buffer against mental health issues. It can, we know from, there's a huge literature on loneliness that ties loneliness to getting sick and to mortality. When people are lonely, they are more likely to become sick.
And if you're by yourself, you're in your head. You're only hearing your own thoughts. You're not hearing, you're not having any interaction that might change, break that thought pattern for just a second.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're getting no feedback.
I agree. Yeah. I think we can't underestimate what the pandemic did to our society. we had people telling us to socially distance, not interact with each other. And that became, I think it was tough for a lot of people, but I think it became the comfort zone for a lot of people too, because now you're dealing with confirmation bias, right? So now you got YouTube, you got social media. My feed don't look like your feed because this thing called the algorithm now. Again, technology has become it can be a very useful tool, but it also can be very manipulative as well to have you stuck in this confirmation bias feedback loop. And when you're in that echo chamber and you're being told everything you want to hear, what's the reason for you to go out and now have another perspective, for lack of a better term, begin to challenge or give you something different to think about? Yeah.
And you're working, Jamal, in the Lakeview neighborhood. You're with the Lakeview Neighborhood Alliance.
Yes.
Neighborhoods are comprised of all different kinds of people, all different age groups, all different interests. Just from your observations, does this loneliness or this lack of connection, for lack of a better term, does it impact all these age groups, all these different groups differently, the same? Who's more susceptible? From your experience,
I think it impacts everyone on different levels. I think the two groups that I see are most susceptible are the younger, I think with the Gen Z, Gen Alpha, and the baby boomers. Because us, you know, in between, I'm born in the 80s. I done had no internet, you know, one house phone, dial up internet. You know, I went through those iterations. We had to adapt very quickly because that's just what it was. We was in school at that time. But baby boomers, my parents, like, it's like I'm used to a way, and I'm having to make these adjustments after I have gotten established. I done got my retirement, my pension. What do you mean I got to learn how to do email now? I got to what? You know, And then the young people are coming behind with all kind of different technology and things. You know, my nephew is, when he was 5 or 6 years old, he knew how to iPad and everything else. It's just part of the natural thing. We don't even have the analog clocks in school no more. They took those out because we're not even teaching people how to read those clocks and things of that nature. So I think it impacts those two generations the most. But my generation, I'm a millennial, Gen X and millennials, I think it's up to us to really understand how to bridge that gap and begin to do things intentionally to build more community and get away from this gross individualism.
I saw a video on one of the social media platforms, and I don't think it was AI. I don't think it was fake. I think it was real. And a dad gave his three sons a rotary telephone.
There you go. Yeah.
And said, use it.
That's right.
They could not figure it out. So if you have social media connections and you're on your phone all the time and you're talking to people, I guess some of those people could be AI, but if you're talking to people on social media, Joshua, why do you need connections with neighbors? Why do you need that? It's right there in the palm of your hand.
Yeah, it's right there in the palm of my hand, but it's somewhat superficial.
There you go.
Yep.
I can't put my hands on them. I can't shake their hand. Mm-hmm. I can't make eye contact.
Yep.
I can't get those four V's I like to talk about when we're talking about the baby boomers and the youth.
What are those four V's?
Those four V's are validation, visible, value, and voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So with that, I believe that every member of the community, of the neighborhood, has a sense of that, should have a sense of validation,
right?
Visible. Oftentimes, you know, those that might be down on their luck or those that might not be doing as well, we might make them marginalized or invisible at the traffic light and any traffic
That's
light
right.
in Charlotte.
That's right.
We can see individuals.
Yeah.
We may just look straight ahead.
Right.
Making individuals feel invisible. Something simple just to say, I see you.
And there's also that, but when you're in a traffic situation, you don't want to give somebody a look because they might take it the wrong way.
Right.
And gosh knows what happens
and
next.
And then voice. Everyone has a voice.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more about this and about losing trust in each other. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte, offering an international curriculum and IB diploma program for high school students designed to help prepare them for college, careers, and a global community. BISCharlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about living among strangers, about loneliness, about building and rebuilding social connections with free people who are approaching it from very different perspectives. Amy Canavello is a professor of psychological and organizational science at UNC Charlotte. Joshua Kirvin is a clinical social worker and faculty member in the School of Social Work at UNC Charlotte. And Jamal Kennard is executive director of the Lakeview Neighborhood Alliance, where he's working to put into practice a lot of the stuff that we're talking about here this morning. Amy, the Pew Research Organization found that about 62% of U.S. adults know only some of their neighbors. 12% don't know any of them at all. And when it comes to trust, only 44% of adults say they trust all or most of the people in their neighborhood. Of course, if you don't know people, you have no reason to trust them. But from a psychological perspective, what happens when those neighborhood relationships, when that trust begins to disappear?
I think we all start to live on islands. In our, right, you live in an island in your house, and you don't connect to other people, and you don't connect with them. And when we don't have that, right? So I feel incredibly fortunate to have a really wonderful neighborhood where I know all my neighbors, and when I'm going out of town, I can say, hey, you know, I'm going out of town. Can you just so you know, just so you're watching, and they watch. Right. We lose those kinds of connections with others. We, again, those loose ties of, that can provide us with a lot of social support or availability of support. Right. We think about what can other people do for us? And it's not even that. When I have a problem, will there be somebody there to help me? And a lot of times our neighbors are the people that we've turned to first. Right. My family lives across the country, right? So I can't count on them for immediate support. But I know that if something happened, I could go next door.
Just because the Pew Research Organization says that 44% of adults say they trust all or most of the people in their neighborhood, that doesn't mean the people that you don't trust. It doesn't mean that you distrust them.
No, not necessarily.
There is a difference there.
Yeah.
You just don't know them.
Yeah,
you can't
just
put your confidence
exactly
in them.
Exactly.
Whether you live in a single-family home neighborhood or you live in an apartment building, Joshua, if you don't know your neighbors, trust is not going to be high, I would think, in those people. But in modern life, the schedule of getting up in the morning, if you go to work, getting in the car in the garage, you never walk outside the front door. You just get in the car and go. You go to work, you come home, you pull into the garage, you close the door, you're in your house, you watch TV, you go to bed, and you rinse and repeat the next morning. So in those situations, I'm asking devil's advocate questions here. Why do we need neighbors? If you don't interact with them, why do you need to trust them?
Yeah. I think that's important, that if we don't know our neighbors, we won't have memories, milestones, or moments, affectionately called the M&Ms. There won't be no M&Ms that we've had as we lived in a neighborhood. So yes, I go to work. Yes, I take care of my family. Yes, I make sure that I'm a responsible person, but I'm very much in my own silo. And I think that once we, you know, begin to recognize that the importance is a neighborhood is something to grow with, to grow old with, to grow our children with, that is something that would be important. Oftentimes when the weekend comes, we take maybe outside of our neighborhood. But what could we do within the neighborhood to make it a place for memories to be made, for moments to happen? Yeah. Across all generations. I think that's something that we've lost, and I think that's something that's important that we need to think about. How do we get back to?
Agreed. I think, you know, being a practitioner and applying these things that we're talking about, three things that has to be brought into this conversation. Yeah, we need the data, right, the reports that you're referencing, but we also need to have the lived experience of people, right, and we also got to have the proper historical context. People have been hurt by neighbors. You know, we see in Charlotte right now, we're dealing with the transportation expansion. And, you know, we had a historically black neighborhood called Brooklyn in the heart of Charlotte that, you know, was thriving, you know, a big part of Charlotte's economy, had their own economy. And when we built 277 for other neighbors in Charlotte who just wanted shorter commutes to work, they interrupted people's economy, people's way of life. Those M&Ms you're talking about.
For newcomers, raised that neighborhood.
They raised that neighborhood. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you're talking about people who have had distrust sown inside of that.
Right.
So when we started LNA on the west side of Charlotte, we knew that a lot of those people that came from Brooklyn now live on the west side of Charlotte and had that level of distrust sown inside of their minds. So we know we had to be very intentional about putting the neighbor back in neighborhood. And I'm happy to say that we've done that because now we have a 97% trust rate.
How do you do that? How do you take people who have a reason to be distrustful,
right,
and then rebuild that trust? Because their distrust, I would think, is outside the neighborhood, a lot of it. But a lot of it may be inside the neighborhood. So how do you rebuild that? Where do you start?
Yeah, I think you got to speak to people's pain before you speak to their potential. Right? You have to acknowledge that this happened. And a lot of times in America, we always like, let's move forward. And yes, we should, but I can't move forward without acknowledging what has taken place in the past, because people who are not aware of their past are doomed to repeat it. And I think that's a big thing that we have in our country, which also impact our neighborhoods, because yes, we should move forward and do our best to do better. But if I'm not acknowledging what has taken place, I'm going to do it again.
Yeah. Right.
Even if I'm unknowingly doing it again and my intentions are to be doing good, you can be very well intentioned and do more harm.
I don't know where you are in the progress that you're trying to make in that neighborhood, but have you been able to see changes as a result of the work you're doing to rebuild that trust?
For sure.
What would they be?
When we first started, we had a 34% trust rate, and now we at 97%.
How do you measure that?
We measure that through an annual survey that we do at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And then we have our three E's, what we call engage, educate, and empower, right? We have a strategic plan that we have a short-term responsive and a long-term ecosystem plan. And we understood with those three E's, the first E is engage. You gotta be willing to get out of your house and engage. So we did a community engagement series. And what brings people together? Food. Music, right? And you know, we got some extraordinary cooks in our neighborhood, which is have always been historically. And in most cultures, you think about, you know, African American, Italian, Irish, everyone has that dish.
Yeah.
Or those dishes that they know, hey, if I put this on the grill and let that smell permeate through the air, people coming. Mm. So if I'm doing that intentionally, people are now coming, and now we have a chance to do the next E. Be educated about each other's experiences. Where are you from? What brought you to Charlotte? Oh, how many kids you have? Mm. What school you went to? Now you're having all these different things, and it leads to the last E, empowerment.
And what do you see as the result of that?
Yeah, the last E, empowerment. We're able to create this strategic plan and then understand our roles in making it come to fruition. And not only are we doing it for our community, we're organizing with other neighborhoods, and we're building a model that can be replicated across the city.
I mean, there may be people listening to this conversation thinking, that would be cool to do in my neighborhood. But I would think, from your point of view, as a person who came into this neighborhood and decided this is what we're going to do, that maybe people were reluctant to on your bandwagon.
For sure.
Like, what's his agenda?
Yeah, for sure.
So how do you...
Now, that's a good question.
How do you do that?
Yeah, so for number one, I came in, again, with this analysis, especially after the Raj Teddy report came out, had Charlotte 50 out of 50, and I'm, like, knocking on people's doors and talking about it, and people are like, uh-uh. So I had to, like, remind myself of where I grew up in Newberry, South Carolina. I had to go have tea with Miss Hattie.
You're right.
I had to go take out Miss Priscilla's trash can. I had to go cut Mr. George's yard. And now the consistency of doing that, putting myself in these quote-unquote uncomfortable situations, you people are able to get to know you on a different level, not as Jamal, the executive director, or Jamal, the neighbor down the street. It's you're Jamal from Newberry, South Carolina, who has a mom who's a cosmetologist, a dad who's working in the insurance industry. Oh, you got an older sister. You got two nephews. Right. And now people are able to see that commonality between us.
Right. You're a neighbor.
I'm a neighbor.
Right. You're a neighbor.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's, isn't that what you try to do?
Yes, sir. Put a neighbor back in neighborhood.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, sir.
One point can I add to
go
that?
Yeah, sure.
Is that I think through consistency, too.
Yes, sir.
Because through stern looks, who are you?
That's right.
Closed doors, they start to see you consistently showing up.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what color you are, what gender you are, just consistently showing up. And as they see you consistently showing up, the next step is that we just need to be a simple listener.
Mm-hmm.
As Jamal was saying, just being able to let them acknowledge them and let them share their experience. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the most powerful thing I've seen is being a clinician is just being a good listener.
That's right.
And people like talking about themselves.
That's right.
Well, I also think it gives people an opportunity to, it gives you an opportunity to see their humanity.
That's right.
I'm looking at your hat.
We'll get to that
right?
one.
And it allows them to see yours.
That's right.
So now you're not the executive director.
Jamal.
You're Jamal.
That's right.
And I know you as a human.
That's
and
right.
I can connect to you that way. And I feel like that's also so important.
Yeah. And that's family, though. You see what I'm saying? Family. You got to take off the titles.
Yeah.
But in a society that says you are valued because of your title or because of where you live or the car you drive or what you do for a living, you got to take that off when you go to grandma's house.
Right.
Because you still got to get in there and take that trash can out.
Yep.
You got to be willing to do the work.
There you go.
Not just be the boss.
And be human.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about fear. And if you live in a silo and you never leave your house or you don't know your neighbors or you don't really have any social interactions that are meaningful over time, you get the sense that everything outside of that bubble that you're living in is scary.
Yes.
And we do have, and this is amplified by politicians who take advantage of it, that the world is dangerous out there.
Yep.
Is it simply that we've become more isolated, that we fear what's outside there, Amy?
So I think there are a couple of things going on. I think we see a lot more of the negativity because that's what we attend to, right? So the internet has learned that if it's bad, people will pay attention to it. And that's because when things are threatening, we need to defend against it. We need to know it, right? When things are going well, I don't need to attend to that information. And so it becomes less important to me. But then I think when you're bombarded with that on a constant basis, that's sort of how it builds a lens through which you view the world. Right, where everything's a potential threat.
So if that lens has been built and it's calcified and you don't have any opportunities or reasons to break through that bubble of your own, how do you do it? How do you take that first step? Because that first step is a scary step. I don't know you. Why would I want to talk to you?
Well, but it doesn't have to be, we don't have to be best friends.
Right?
I think it can just be waving to you, right? Mm. Waving. I wave to everybody.
That really makes a difference?
I think it does. Yes. I think it does. Making eye contact.
Consistently waving.
Consistently.
Yep. Every morning.
Yep.
This person is waving to me. It's 6 times I've been rejected.
That's right.
I've been ignored.
Yep.
You know what? I'm tired of speaking to this
person.
I'm not just going to speak no more. But you got to be, that can't be you. You got to say, I'm going to be continuous because I want to live in a neighborhood. And so it has to start with you.
And I think, again, I think most people assume that others don't want that interaction, right? Outsiders don't want that interaction. But if you signal to them that you are okay with it, they will reciprocate.
Right.
People want connection. They desire connection. Yes. They're afraid of rejection.
Rejection, isolation, safety, whatever.
Yep.
You look scary. Yeah. What does that mean?
But if you signal that you're safe.
Where is that coming from?
Sometimes people have a reason, a real legitimate reason to be afraid. There is crime in their neighborhoods in some cases. Do we have evidence that building these social relationships, saying hi in the morning, being present in these short-term, just how you doing conversations, does that reduce the incidence of crime? Do we have any empirical evidence that would suggest that?
I think that there is some research that would reflect that through consistent neighborhoods being connected, that we are able to get through ups and downs. In some of the places that I have lived, I've noticed that when there's a community tragedy or there's an injustice, all the neighbors come together when there's an injustice or there's a community tragedy.
Right.
So why do we have to wait?
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Compared to if we have it established.
I agree.
Inside, outside, every day. I think that's something that's important.
Is that what's being called a resilient neighborhood?
Right.
That's what that means?
That's being called a resilient neighborhood. But I would propose that resiliency is not necessary until you're faced with adversity. I'm proposing, like, let's just live amongst each other.
That's right.
And make this the best neighborhood possible. And then when resiliency comes, that community situation comes, we're already galvanized together because we're collective.
We found in our neighborhood that preparedness increases resiliency. right? So we have a program that started during the pandemic that we call our Economic Mobility Program that allows us to give gift cards to people. Every time they have we have a community engagement, we give $100 gift cards to all of our residents that are registered for it. Mm. And by us doing that on a consistent basis, to Joshua's point, we have built that level of trust to where now, during the pandemic, again, social distancing, but when you have that $100 gift card to where you have help with your groceries or your medicine or your PPEs or your transportation, now people started cooking outside in front of their house, and now you're outside more. So now it's the waving in peace. And then by us doing this program, Chief Putney, Kurt Putney was the chief of police at the time. He called me. He said, "Jamal, what are y'all doing over there?" Mm-hmm. I said, "What you mean?" He said, "Man, the crime has decreased over there. Like, and we ain't getting no calls about break-ins." I said, "Well, when you concentrate poverty in one area and you don't have no economic support to deal with some of the tragedies of living in concentrated poverty, but when you have that safety net of saying, hey, here's $100, $200 a month that can help you out, now you're seeing that you can depend on your neighborhood for some of your most critical needs."
Plus, it would seem to me that if, Amy, you know your neighbor, this is not the case all the time, but you're less likely to rob them because you know who they are what their personal situation is, that they have their own troubles.
That's they're a human, right? Just like me.
Uh-huh. That's right.
And they're trying just like I am.
Yes, I am. That's right.
Yep. I've been reading about this yesterday. I kept reading the term healthy neighborhood, Joshua. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means. I couldn't find a real definition. They just kept calling healthy neighborhoods. You strive to have a healthy neighborhood.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think that that would be the goal. And a healthy neighborhood doesn't need to be socially, economic status driven. It can be a low income area, mid income neighborhood, urban or rural or suburban. A healthy neighborhood is a place I look forward to going to. I know for myself, when I'm finished with work, I look forward to going home.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Not going home to my place, but going home to my neighborhood.
Because that is home.
That is home.
I add this. In neighborhoods like Lakeview on the west side of town and other places as well, just where my lived experience is, people say that Lakeview is an under-resourced neighborhood. I say that's part of the truth. The other part of the truth is that we are overly extracted neighborhood. Our best minds, our best, most talented people are told to get out. Mm. We've been told that throughout our history. And we got to reverse that paradigm and say, no, I'm a great because of my neighborhood, not despite it.
So moving on up to the east side.
Yes, sir.
It's not the...
that shouldn't be. I let that narrative go. That's right.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about building connections among people, your neighbors, reestablishing neighborhood connections and reducing the amount of loneliness, which is rampant in the country. We're talking about it with Amy Cannavello, who is a professor of psychological and organizational science, Joshua Kervin, a clinical social worker and faculty member of the School of Social Work at UNC Charlotte, both of them, and Jamal Kennard, executive director of the Lakeview Neighborhood Alliance. You were talking about the temptation that when you have the resources to leave a neighborhood that perhaps is underprivileged, that a lot of people logically take advantage of those resources, and that diminishes the people who can help those other neighbors and leave them behind. How difficult is it to stay behind when you have the ability to move up to the east side?
Right.
What makes you want to stay behind? What makes you, where's the payoff?
It's about what you value. What do you value that? Or do you value connections with people? And if a lot of people, we like to say that we are data driven. Like when we started this conversation, you rattled off a lot of the studies. But the truth is about humans, we're narrative driven. We have a narrative that we've been told about what success looks like in this country. And we have gotten further and further and further away from two things, family and community. Mm-hmm. It's all about yourself, your career, what you can attain, what you can buy, the travels. You have a lot of people traveling and don't even say, hey, when they're in these different countries and things, they got the phone taking pictures to put on social media so they can impress other people. So I put on my card right here. I had to learn how to be more involved versus trying to be impressive. Mm-hmm. But I was taught to be impressive ever right. since I was a young kid, and I was valued for being impressive, not for being involved.
Wow.
And I think we get confused about our values, right? For so sure. in my own work, you know, it depends on how you ask the question, but when we ask people, okay, what's the most, what is the thing that is most important to you? 90% of the time, they say other people.
For sure.
In some way.
That's right.
But in our daily behaviors, mm-mm. right, when we're getting bombarded with information about what we should value,
that's right.
right, that somehow overrides
that's right.
that deep value.
That's right.
Which is really, yeah. it's a tough battle, right?
Yes.
But I think tough. When we remind people what they care about,
oh man,
it matters.
It matters.
So we got Jamal over here who's driving the bus toward mm-hmm. building these relationships mm-hmm. in that one neighborhood, Lakeview. Not every neighborhood has a Jamal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to this, Amy, and you think, well, this is a good idea. This would improve my life. I would mm-hmm. feel better about where I live and who I live around and who's living around me. How do you start if you haven't got a Jamal to push the cart down the aisle?
I think you start small. I think you be consistent. Because kind of the things that we've been talking about, mm-hmm. you're just doing it on a much lower scale, right? A much smaller scale. But I think you can build that. I've seen it in my own neighborhood, actually. So I've lived there about 10 years, about 5 years, 4 years in, the pandemic hit. And actually, for me, the pandemic made me meet my neighbors because I wasn't going to work every day. I mean, I was working every day, but I was walking my dog like right. four times a day because I needed to get out of my house. And then I would see people in their yards doing things. And I had a dog, so who wants to meet the dog? Everybody. But I think what then happened was I then started having conversations with them slowly, right? And learning about, oh, you really love flowers, or, oh, you work on cars, and tell me about that. I think you just talk to other people, show some interest.
I'll say how we started is, I just think we don't know enough, right? I think number one, we looked at the Maslow's hierarchy of human needs. We were taught this at a very young age. All of us taught this in elementary school. The bottom level of that pyramid, and Maslow's came back and said it was never a pyramid. It's more of a circle. Mm-hmm. He was just persuaded. He was paid to say it was a pyramid to go along with the economy. So that's another conversation, though. But at the bottom of that pyramid, he said the physiological needs of safety, health, having your air, water, food, shelter, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that next level up, after you have those individual needs met, feeling like you love and belong to something bigger than yourself.
That's it.
And even that comes before your esteem. And if you have esteem, now you get up to self-actualization. Mm-hmm. He also went along to say self-actualization was about the ego. It's truly about self-transformation, mm-hmm. which we all have went through in some time in our life.
Joshua, mm-hmm. you've been writing a novel over there. I'm just curious about some of the things you may be jotting down as this conversation is going on.
Yeah, because I think we can talk about it, but where do we start? You know, there'll be part of the audience that'll say, it was great discussion. But now it's next steps.
Yep.
I would propose one thing that I believe in and one thing that I try to do is start what I don't see. Mm. Don't wait for something to start. Not saying what needs to get done, but start. Start with me. What I don't see is something that's critical. We can do community and neighborhood events, mm-hmm. but community and neighborhood activities are daily.
That's mm-hmm. right.
We can do the event. We can do the Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. We can do the Memorial Day. We can do the event on the weekend. But what are we doing on a daily basis? Consistently. Mm-hmm. Those four V's that I spoke of, mm-hmm. value, validation, visible, and voice, the baby boomers, mm-hmm. the younger generation.
Yeah, gotta be.
All of them have a role to play in the community.
Yeah, mm-hmm. agreed.
And so with the boomers, yes, they might not be swift with the technology, and with the younger generation,
they might be
afraid to go inside the bank because they don't know what that, going inside the bank, they can do everything on their phone, on their tablet. So there's like having those conversations, those intimate conversations between the two, senior prom,
that's right,
where we have the older seniors going to the prom with the youth.
That's right.
There's different events that we can do. Those are milestones, memories, and moments.
Yes, sir.
But consistency is the daily activities we need to see.
So we're building neighborhoods now without sidewalks, yes, without front porches. We're
that's
building
on, next on my list.
we're building technological infrastructure that doesn't require people. We don't go to the checkout counter at the grocery store and talk to the lady behind the thing punching up the numbers.
Right.
We take it to the self-checkout. We don't talk to anybody.
Right.
I got to admit, I kind of like that.
Right.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. Because having that brief interaction with the cashier, it gives you a little bit of a positive oomph to your day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It gives you a little hit of positive affect.
Yeah. And so you never know how you're going to make someone else's day.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I can do quick self-checkout. I have the time. I'll wait in line.
Right.
Good morning. How is your day going?
Yeah. Paper or plastic?
Paper or plastic.
I beg my own if just I make, can chat with
make,
you.
just make conversation. You never know how you're making someone else's day. That's something that I try to live by, and I think that's important.
So when I say we're building these social constructs and physical constructs that prevent us from seeing each other, you said you had that on your list.
Yeah, I think, you know, design of how Charlotte is a community that was not built for people. It has been built for profit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what we value most in this country. But we have to get back to valuing planet, people, as well as profit. And I think if we're doing what's good for planet, if we're doing what's good for people, then the profit will come. But that's something that we really got to contend with as people. Mm-hmm. Why did we not build walkable communities? You know, why is that something? Why didn't we build greenways and parks more in this community to make people want to interact and have places for interaction?
Right.
If we got them, why didn't we keep them up over time?
Right.
So again, I think a lot of this thing is built over what we value. And if you only value profit and if you only value self-interest, we're seeing the effects of that now. And I think now that we see the effects of that, we now have to now combat it with things that we know build community.
Let me share an email that one of our listeners named Bill sent us while we've been talking. Mm-hmm. In 1980, I moved into a new neighborhood in Davidson where I knew almost no one. About 2 months into my 45-year stay here, a neighbor I had barely met came over and said, "We're going on a 4-week trip. If you notice a truck pulling up to our house and being filled with our furniture, please call the police." And my mother-in-law in Charlotte. It was the beginning of a friendship that lasts with their daughter. The original couple died a couple of years ago, but their oldest daughter, who lives in Bakersville, and I still keep in touch. It's one of the reasons I stayed in Davidson.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Isn't that interesting? Dr. Keeleanne Allen, she's a psychologist, Amy, writing in Psychology Today, says that knowing even a few neighbors can reduce loneliness and improve well-being. She says 6 is enough. It doesn't have to be a deep friendship, just the basics like recognizing a face or saying hello. It gives a person a sense of belonging, she says. That seems really ephemeral. Do you agree with her? 6 is enough and just saying hi is enough?
I've never heard that number said in that way before. but I think the larger point that she's making, that it doesn't, you don't need to know everybody, right? You don't need to have conversations with everybody. But if you can know some, mm-hmm, right, then what you do is you end up with this larger network, because the some that you know are going to know other people and connect you to them.
Yeah, right.
And so you don't have to be the only person with all of these connections. By having connections, you are going to connect with others by default.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's levels to relationship. Mm-hmm. I think we got to talk about that. I have my holies of holies, my core best friends, mm-hmm, right? And I probably got about 1 or 2 people that know me on a really intimate level, right?
Yep.
But outside of that, I have associates. Mm-hmm. And that's so funny. You know, we might meet each other out for a basketball game, but I'm not letting you into my holies of holies, but you know more stuff about me. Mm-hmm. Then I might have colleagues or mentors, mm-hmm, and so on and so forth. So I think we have to build our community knowing that there's layers to relationship.
Yeah.
And I think because in my past, I didn't understand boundaries.
Mm.
I let people in that probably shouldn't have been in. And again, I got hurt. So even though I'm farther up on the hierarchy of needs, I feel like I'm in survival mode. Mm-hmm. Wow. And now I'm protecting myself. So I think healing and going to therapy and journaling and meditation and taking walks outside, I think all that stuff is good for your healing. And as you heal, you now know how to have more genuine, healthy connections. Before, you didn't when you was a child.
Because of the collapse of these social connections, there is more loneliness in this country than ever before. There's also a fear of others in the society, and there's isolation. And this isolation, I think, must be playing a role in these daily mass shootings. Mm-hmm. You always hear in the aftermath of these mass shootings that the person who committed the crime was a loner. They didn't talk to anybody. They didn't know anybody. They didn't have a really close social network. They spent a lot of time online, in many cases being influenced, etc. Is this rising disconnection resulting, Joshua, in a sense of distrust among us? Is that part of the problem? We had the shooting yesterday in San Diego. We don't know much about the perpetrators, but they were teenagers who evidently took their lives after they perpetrated the crime or tried to. Is it because we don't have these social connections that we have this epidemic?
I think we do have the social connections, but that's not breaking news. I think that we have the unfortunate tragedies that are glaring at us on a daily level from across the country. Mm-hmm. And from that, that gives us a sense of unsteadiness, uneasiness. Let me make sure I take care of me and my personal family. You know, I can't risk, because it seems the world is going in a different connection. But when we do have a tragedy like what just happened, unfortunately, in San Diego, that's time for the neighborhood to have a discussion. Mm-hmm. Let's meet at the public library and talk about why did this happen. Mm-hmm. We never want this to happen in our community. What are some things we need to continue to do? So I think that social connection is with ups and downs, and those connections are important.
I think for me, though, I don't think it's lack of trust. I think it's lack of understanding.
Yep.
People don't feel seen, valued, heard, and understood anymore.
Yep. Right.
And because they don't have those things, I don't trust. But I think a lot of the people who do those mass shootings, or even the killing that takes place in Charlotte, you know, and some of the things that we've had, the homicide rate has raised, people don't feel understood.
And here in Charlotte, and probably most cities in America where these shootings take place, the people know each other.
That's right, what I'm saying. Yeah.
They know each other.
And we saw the signs. Yeah. When you saw an individual who was acting isolated to themselves, acting different, stop going to school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We've seen the signs, but did we really just go ahead and step in and intervene? And that's if we were neighbors and connected. We would start to talk to that person, hopefully to stop something tragic from happening.
I think we've been told something. Disney told us that life was a fairy tale. And when you start to live life and you realize that it's not like that, and everybody's still acting like that is.
It ticks you off.
And nobody, it ticks you off. Yeah. And nobody is willing to say, I can relate to that. Yeah. I understand. I went through that same thing because we're so high on our pedestal where I can't tell you that stuff because are you going to use it against me and try to take my livelihood away?
I have less than 2 minutes left. Amy,
much to say.
Go ahead and say.
No. Well, no, I was just going to add to what Jamal was saying about, you know, when we isolate ourselves, right, we think we're keeping ourselves safe.
Right.
But when we connect to others, that's when we're safe.
That's when we're safe.
We live in a world that's become increasingly polarized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The reds don't talk to the blues.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember growing up, we had neighbors. They put yard signs up at election time. Quite often they were for candidates my parents did not agree with.
Yep. Yep.
But they were still friends.
That's
they still walked across the yard and said, hey, how you doing? Can I help you with your lawn? Whatever, even though they were voting for the other person.
That's right.
We don't do that anymore.
Yes.
Is that leading to more isolation?
That's intentional. Because if I keep you from talking to your neighbor, what do you believe now? Everything that I'm giving to you.
Yep.
And now you're just debating. You're not having a dialogue and try to get to understanding again.
Yep.
Have we gone too far down the road? Can this be reversed?
Yes, it can be reversed.
Absolutely.
It can be reversed. But it's going to take the people doing it. If we're looking for the media or the politicians to lead the charge in it, we're going to be waiting forever.
Yep.
It's going to take us organizing. And anything that has ever happened in this country that led to mass change, it happened from the people at the base organizing. Mm-hmm. Women having the right to vote was never on the ballot to be voted for. It was something that people organized around and pushed these lawmakers and people in power to have to put on the ballot. I mean, put on the policy.
That's a big stone to roll up the hill. How do you keep the energy?
Everybody got to play a little bit of a part. Yeah.
And I would propose that as far as next steps, what can we do? It's like making time. Making time to listen.
That's good.
Just take time to listen. I have written down, as you were saying.
Quickly, 10 seconds.
Are you waiting for a reaction, or do you want a real response when you say, how's your day going?
Yeah.
When you ask that question, do you just want to say, oh, it's going fine, or are you ready for that real response?
We may need more time, but we're out of it. Joshua McCurbin with UNC's School of Social Work, Amy Canavello, Psychological Organizational Science Department at UNC Charlotte, and Jamal Kennard with Lakeview Neighborhood Alliance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. The producer is Chris Jones. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.